Ujjalanilamani, we're continuing with verse 1. Nayaka Bait, or whatever, different types of heroes, I mean, different aspects of Krishna's heroic personality. Namakrishta Rasagya Shile Nod Dipayan Sadanandam Nijarupotsava Dai Sanatanatma Prabhur Jayati. All glories to the eternal Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Krishna's holy name attracts those that are expert in transcendental mellows, the Rasagya. Krishna's transcendental qualities eternally increase the bliss of his associates and the bliss of his devotees, which is what it says here. His transcendental form brings a great festival of happiness to his devotees. So in one opening verse, Rupa Goswami is glorifying the name of Krishna, the form of Krishna, and the qualities of Krishna. So when all those combine together, then there will be Leela. And it's interesting because the essential sutra for this whole chapter, one about Nayak hero, because in the ensuing verses that follow, Rupa Goswami will describe the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, and not so much something about his name also. So there's very wonderful purports collected here, translated by His Holiness Bhanu Swami from ISKCON. And he has the commentaries of Sri Jiva Goswami Pad and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti. So that we won't read all everything here. There's selected parts that we'll read and we can listen to. Sri Jiva Goswami says in this verse, first, he says, this title of the book, Ujjvala Nilamani. And he says, this is my commentary on Ujjvala Nilamani, which he translates, Bhanu Swami, a brilliant sapphire. Then it says in a footnote, another meaning of Ujjvala Nilamani, which is more appropriate, the sapphire of conjugal ras. That's something of a translation. Very deep translations can be there. And this is previously difficult to gaze upon, has arisen from the sweet ocean of Krishna's bhakti. That's very nice. Jiva Goswami Pad is saying, I'm not the doer. I'm not about to write this commentary in Ujjvala Nilamani, but Krishna has given me bhakti in my heart. And by my bhakti bhajan and by my sincere desire to glorify Radha and Krishna and all their parishads, then this, he's saying, this is the bhakti is the origin. This whole tika is arising from the sweet ocean of nectar of Krishna bhakti. So that means in his heart, in Jiva Goswami Pad's heart and mind, he's giving us some indication of the unlimited dimension of his mind and heart. In the ocean, I don't have the Sanskrit, it must be very beautiful. Difficult to gaze upon. In other words, it's very difficult to understand this Ujjvala Shringara Rati of Radha and Krishna. It's too brilliant. That's because someone comes at night and you're just sitting somewhere, just by chance, it's a very unusual analogy, but just say for chance. You're just sitting in your house and you're resting, the lights are off, and you're just sitting in a chair and whatever. And then your son comes up with he got a new flashlight, a big, big torch, you know, many batteries and whatnot. And he comes up and he turns it on full blast. He's not a very nice behavior, Western style son. So then he shines it in the brother's eyes. And then the brother, he says, hey, look. And then the brother turns and he turns it on. And brother is blinded by the flashlight. And he can't see. Obviously, there's some operator of the flashlight. His brother is there. And the room has furniture and articles in it that he's familiar with. But now under this blinding effulgence created by this powerful torch flashlight, then the elder brother cannot see anything or perceive anything. So this is the nature of Radha and Krishna's Sringharati. It's imperceivable. It cannot be seen. It cannot be understood. Even if you describe it in a summary way with some verses, as Rupa Goswami has done, which these verses themselves, these are the jewels that have risen from the ocean of his bhakti. To carry the analogy further, that Jiva Goswami says that this tika is arising from the ocean. Because he's making a play here between gems and ocean. And because from the ocean, certain gems, they manifest automatically. Everyone knows about pearls from the oyster in the ocean. But very few people know that there's many other types of valuable gems that wash up on different beaches of the world. And since we were in a big institution with many international devotees, we met some devotees from Ivory Coast or Gold Coast or different coasts of Africa. And there's entire stretches of the beach, long beach by the ocean, 100 kilometers, 200 kilometers, and it's all protected by the government army. And every so often during the year or whatever, the waves wash up gems. They're not cut gems, but the stones, diamonds and emeralds and rubies, they wash up on the beach like pebbles. If when you walk along the beach, sometimes you find some, not nowadays, but in the old days we would find little green pieces and little blue pieces and little brown pieces, and they're all rounded off. And I said, what is this? Is this a shell or what? When I was little, my parents said, no, this is a broken bottle. A broken bottle has been tossed and turned by the waves and become rounded. You know, like ground down, just like the waves of Triguna Mayi. They grind us down and round us out. So they're looking nice, a white sand, and you see a blue piece of glass, or brown or green. Even clear glass looks like crystal. That's just glass. Now in Africa, when they walk along, they find diamonds and rubies. And the government of that country in Africa, that's how they run their government, with the ocean gems. Like many seaside countries, part of their economy is fishing. So fishing, like Japan exports so many types of fish to the Moluccas and the Yavanas. So they harvest gems from the ocean, not fish. Certainly more lucrative to collect one diamond instead of 10,000 fish, 10 million fish. So this is the Ujjala Nilamani. This is a great gem of Radha and Krishna's Sringharati, this beautiful blue effulgence. So he's saying, this has come from my ocean of bhakti. Rupa Goswami Pad, he's written all these verses, which are his gems from his ocean of bhakti, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He was swimming in a whole ocean of Ras, Amrit. And then as he was swimming in the ocean of Ras, Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Ras, very nectarian, Amritam. Like some oceans are made of liquor, some oceans are made of salt water, some oceans fresh water, honey, ghee, yogurt, milk, kheer sagar, dahi sagar, madira sarkar or sindhu. Wine, ocean of wine. So for some people, these are different types of nectar. So he's swimming in that Bhakti Rasamrita, that nectarian ocean of devotion. Then he thought, I'm swimming on the surface. I'm showing Shantaras and Dasiras and Sakiras, Madhuriras. But these are only some small ripples, or waves in this vast ocean of Madhurya Ras. Let me dive deeper in this ocean of bhakti, Madhurya. So then he dove very down to the bottom and he found a blue sapphire. He found the Sringharati of Radharani, which he wanted so much to tell, which he'll tell in the next verse also. So the title is indicating that this is a book very interesting because it's a Rahasya subject. is a very secret subject, not meant for everyone, only very selected, tasteful and mature devotees that have the ruchi and samskaras to practice the Raghunuga Bhakti and seriously pursuing the eternal service of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. This book is for them. So just like the nature of the subject matter being described, the title itself, the subject matter is very elusive and very difficult to comprehend or understand for everyone. 99% of the people Indians, they just fold their hands and say, I don't know, Radha and Krishna, all glories to them, but I worship Krishna. I worship Rukmini Dwarkadish. Even Vaishnavas and worshippers of Krishna, they have difficulty with Radharani and gopis and paramour love, and it's just beyond. So now, that is the nature of the subject and of the Leela and of the love of Radha and Krishna is very rahasya, secret, confidential, and mysterious. So now the title of the book is also confidential, secret, and mysterious. Because if you get a book, it says, The Sinking of the Titanic. Well, then you know it's about some boat that named Titanic that sunk. Or the art of chanting Hare Krishna. Little every time. This is a book about chanting Hare Krishna. It's pretty clear. It's no secrets there. I mean, there's some secrets, but not in the title. So someone says, oh, here, take this book, Ujjwala Nilamani. Huh? It's a book about jewels? It's a book about light? Ujjwala? A book about Deepavali? It's all the glories of Deepavali, Deepotsava? What is this Ujjwala? You know? I had a friend once named Ujjwala. Nilamani. I wish I had the money to buy one. You know, sapphire. What is this book? I mean, you can never judge a book by its, well, you can judge this book by its cover, but you can never judge this book by its title. If it's a black and white book. You're in a bookstore, Ujjwala Nilamani. No, I don't. I have one. What do I need? I have one. Okay, good. And it's shining also, so I don't need this. So he's following right along with the secrets and the gems and the whole analogy. He's right into it. And as I mentioned, Rupa Goswami wrote about all this Shringharati and Ujjwala Shringharati of Radha and Krishna, but in a very, although it's the most elaborate way, but still he directly asked Sri Jiva Goswami Pad to write commentaries on all of his works. He said, you can better explain all these things. So Rupa Goswami, we see that he is on such a high, the highest possible platform of bhakti and ras, that when he was writing things, he just assumed that his audience would have so much adhikar and so much qualification and so much understanding. And he didn't anticipate there would be so much misunderstanding and misconstruing of his books and teachings. I mean, his teachings and shlokas. I'll give you an example. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's 40 verses about Raghunuga Bhakti. Verse 2, 1, the first way, first part, chapter 2, verse 270 to 309, I believe, about 40 verses, something like that. 40 verses. And there he speaks about Raghunuga Bhakti. And so 40 from 300, 260 verses he speaks about Vaidhi Sadhana. So there, in one verse where he's talking about some essential part of the 40 verses, three or four are essential to the Raghunuga Bhakti actual practice. The other, there's definitions and different varieties of Raghunuga Bhakti and different Sambandha Nuga, many terms and things. And finally, the actual practice is in verse 294, 5, 6, like this. Seva Sadaka Rupena Sudrupena Chatrahi, and like this. So one verse he says Braja Loka Anusarata. Braja Loka Anusarata. We should follow, I think it's pretty easy. Braja Lok means a residence of Vrindavan. Braja Loka Anusarata means we should follow in their footsteps. It says Anusaran, like Anusaran, Anusaran. We should follow them, not imitate them. No, I'm Radha, I'm Krishna, you're my Radha. No, not like that. So he just said that. He wrote in Sanskrit. Raghunuga Bhakti, we should choose, we don't actually choose, that's all arranged by Krishna and Guru. It's like, you go to the Guru and he says, so you'll be an Alita's gun. No, I already chose, I'm with Tunga Vidya, you know. And then Gurudev will say, no, that's nice, but you know, you're with me. And so, although it says Nija Samitam, it says Nija Samitam, and I discussed this with my teacher. I said, Nija means your own, and Samitam, I think, means your choice or whatever, selection. He said, that's again another one. That's why I had to ask, because it's not clear. Rupa Goswami's book is not clear. One should follow a Brijvasi of his own choice. Well, which one and how do you choose? Actually, first, somehow, you don't even choose that particular person, but somehow by the arrangement of your destiny and the will of Krishna, practically the same, as they're combined, one meets Guru, Sri Guru, and takes diksha and follows that Guru forever. Janmi Janmi Prabhu say, this is in Loknath Goswami, Sri Guru Charana Padma. Janmi Janmi Prabhu say, I also discussed this with my Gurudev, and because he knows all this Bengali and grammar, which you know also. He said this, I forget exactly, but different words and verbs, Prabhu Janmi Janmi say. He said this word sayi means this one, whatever, means, I'm saying, Oh Gurudev, it's not just an emotional expression like if you're married to someone or someone says, oh, I will love you. I mean, you know, seven pharaohs and all that, okay, seven lives. But just aside from that and pretend you're not Indian, if someone really loves husband, wife. Oh, I love you so much. I will love you life after life. I will marry you or whatever. I'll follow you or wherever you go, whatever. You know, a really beautiful, loving couple. So then, of course, that may be an exaggeration because they're so intensely infatuated with each other and they truly, genuinely feel that heartly love and attachment and harmonious blending together. So they maybe verbally express that as a way of just conveying love. I mean, the realism of it, that's a whole other question. One member of the partner may become an animal or in next life or degrade themselves to a lower human situation or higher, very hard to say where one will go in next life. So when someone hears this, that Janmi Janmi Prabhu say, oh Prabhu, Prabhu means Guru or God. God and Guru, Guru is God. Guru is Prabhu, and he's Guru, the Savior Bhagavan and Sevaka Bhagavan. So that someone might say, which is what I've heard when I asked some sannyasis this about 30 years ago, what is the meaning of this? They say, no, it's just an expression that we should feel so much we love our guru now in this life that we're willing to follow him every life. But next life, you'll get it's a different jiva, and you know, you'll get another body and your guru will get liberated. How? It's like, it'll be some guru, but some different jiva like this. This was told. Have you heard? Have you ever heard that? Yeah, so I had that understanding, and then as I grew up and heard more from different teachers, it was always enigmatic because these words of these great Mahatmas and great Acharyas like Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya, which is a glorious term of a very grand and exalted personality, Mahashaya, and then Baladeva Devotion, etc., they're not just making poetry and singing sweet Bengali bhajans. There's deep philosophical import and meaning in everything they say. And if you act just, Prabhupada often once said that these bhajans are also tattva siddhanta. And I never realized more until recently. Like, there's one song that Gorong, maybe it's Gorong Gero Dutipada, says, Nityasiddha Kore Mane. You know that there's one line that says, Nityasiddha Kore Mane Sangye. Goranga Sangye Nityasiddha Kore Mane. So what it's saying there, Goranga, something like this, I'll tell you in English. Goranga Sangye Nityasiddha Kore Mane. Kore Mane. Which, there's two parts of this phrase in this song. I think it's Goranga Dutipada, you know, Prabhupada sang like that. I think it's that one. It's a famous one. Or Hari Hari Bolite, I forget. But the line is, we sing it, I sang it 40 years ago in a temple with some devotee leading. I don't remember all that so much. But we many times sang and translated it. But we never really thought that each line of this song is a sutra, it's a shloka. Like each line of the Bhagavatam, there's 50 pages commentaries. There's one shloka of the Bhagavatam, four pada, four lines. Sometimes in Sanskrit Hindi books, they make two lines. Like this book has two lines, so it'll be, but it's four parts, charapada, but printed in two lines. And so there's... you know that there's only four lines. Then there's 11 acharyas commenting on those four lines, and each one's writing 10 pages. There's 60, 70, 80 pages commentary on one shlok out of 18,000. So if you get the 11 commentaries on the entire Bhagavatam in Hindi, it's like, you know, there's like 60 volumes or something. It's like this long thing, you know. Unbelievable. So therefore, there's this phrase there, it says that the associates of Goranga Sangye, Nityasiddha Kore Mane, all the associates of Lord Goranga that advented with him and interacted with him, they're all Nityasiddhas. They're all Nityasiddha Parikars. And this Nityasiddha Kore Mane, you can help me. Kore Mane means I should think. I should, mane means like man. I should respect them, and I should, man, it's like man and money, you know, it can be like man. Man means self-respect. So I should respect them. I should respect them and see them like that and consider them like that and think that, and it's a fact that they're all eternal associates. Jaghai and Madhai is an eternal associate of Krishna. And Gopal Chapal and the whole gang, so to speak. Forgive my colloquial word, the whole group, let's say, Bhaktagan, to be more correct, some Gaura Bhaktas. So there's one night of a song, and we sing, okay, but then my teacher was pointing out, and he says, because someone asked me, and I wasn't really clear, I thought some people may not be part, I said, are there some members of the cast and the Leela of Lord Goranga that aren't really eternal associates, like these big offenders and different, some pretty interesting characters there that he meets in his Leela. And then my guru just said, you know this song. And then he said, Nityasiddha, whatever. And I said, yeah, I know. But then when he said that song, I said, oh, that. Because then I could understand, oh, this is what it means, Nityasiddha. So now, for 99% of devotees, they'll sing that song and just think, okay, Nityasiddha, and that has a nice sound, Sangye, Mane, and this, that. So similarly, this when we sing the Guru song, Sri Guru Charan Padma, it's Prabhu say, Janmi Janmi say, Prabhu say, whatever. So the verbs and the words in the song, it means you, Gurudev, in your self-same form, you will be my guru in every birth. You will come back. So then the next question is, well, will that jiva, because Chandogya Upanishad is quoted in Bhakti Sandarvas everywhere, Acharya is quoted all the time, says that the jivatma can expand into 1,200 different sarups. So the guru, the sadguru, even if he goes to the spiritual world to be with Krishna, he can be there with one form. And then he can advent in our next life. So now he advents, the same jiva, He takes a new body, but as explained to me, because Shastra can only be understood from the mouth of the guru and the teachers, let's say, teachers, whoever they are, and with the blessings of Krishna and the endeavor of bhakti of the inquirer. So these three things together, the guru, Krishna, and bhakti, will produce some understanding of Shastra. If you only have one, not the other two, you won't get the understanding. So we need the touch of Krishna's mercy, we need the guidance of sadhus, and we need the grace of Bhakti Devi, who is pleased with our execution of devotional activities. So then we'll understand. So therefore he told me, he said, yes, the guru will have a new body, and you'll have a new body. But as it says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 43, it says, purva vyasa and purva sanskaras. And then the translation says, Krishna is telling about the yogi, the fallen yogi. That includes the devotee also. Devotee is a bhakti yogi. He doesn't make perfection in one life. Then next life, he will take birth, and this is the interesting point of the verse, the part of the verse. He will again take up that way of life that he did in last life, and those practices that he practiced, the purva abhyas. There's two aspects. The verse says purva abhyas and purva sanskaras. So the purva sanskaras that he will can carry on with and continue in next life after dying are all his karmas stored in his chitta. And the purva abhyas, if there is any, the abhyas aspect is the paramarthic aspect, the alokic aspect, the spiritual side of life. So, because we're talking about a yogi, the chapter 6 is about the fallen, the yogi brushed. So then, we're not talking about just some truck driver, we're talking a specific category. So he did abhyas, he did his yoga abhyas, his yoga sadhana. And so this verse applies to them and any yogi. So it's a very, so that's why usually when saints and gurus speak, everything they actually say, like your Guru Maharaj, anything he writes in his purport, even though it's not footnoted, or he doesn't say this is such and such verse or whatever, everything they're saying is actually some shloka from somewhere. And as you learn more Shastra yourself, then you'll say, oh, Gurudev is casual speaking in a satsang. He actually quoted this analogy used. It was so beautiful, but it's from 11th canto, chapter 2, because the whole brain and the whole chitta of the guru becomes just filled with the katha and these great devotees, great memories, and Krishna gives them all faculties and facilities to do the udara work of preaching and helping the parts and parcels of Krishna. I mean, guru is Krishna coming to help Krishna. In Gita, Mameva Amsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, the jivas are my Amsha, Mama Amsha. So Krishna comes as, Krishna takes the rupa of Guru. He appears before us as Guru because our eyes, we can't see Krishna, we can't hear his instructions. Guru, and then Krishna appears before the conditioned soul who's as Guru, and then the Guru preaches to Krishna in the form of the jiva. We're also little Krishna. The problem is we all think we are Krishna. We are the enjoyer, we are the controller. So this fact is that it will be the same guru, and Krishna will give you the ability to, you will recognize either, the way my teacher said by transcendental arrangement, the disciple and the guru will recognize each other. Very nice English for a 100-year-old Bengali gentleman, Pandit Gurudev. By transcendental, I mean it's Krishna. So it's like, by transcendental arrangement, I think maybe you've known or maybe you personally experienced, I've been around a while in this body and I met many God brothers that said, as soon as I saw Prabhupada on the Rath Yatra cart, I was only coming to the Sunday feast. I wasn't thinking about I'm being Hare Krishna or anything. I just He was in the Rath Yatra car in the central, what they call some park over there, Golden Gate Park in California, San Francisco, and coming through on a Rath Yatra car in 68 or whatever it was, 69, 70, I don't know, somewhere back there. And I just saw him. And I saw his picture in the books and magazines, and in the temple they have his painting on the asan because he was there, you know. No murtis. When I joined, there was no murtis of Prabhupada. There was Prabhupada, Sakshat Prabhupada. It was a very strange, actually a very strange transition to come in the same temple, and usually you see empty asan where there's the picture, a photo of Prabhupada sitting on that same asan in that same temple. Now you come and see a murti. Anyway, so the devotees, they say, I saw him and I thought, oh, I know this person. He's my guru. I don't even know I wanted a guru. I met many like that. So I never met Prabhupada, but my teacher that I'm with, my Babaji Pandit, I met him about 20 years ago, and I felt a strong sense of kinship and friendship. And I almost felt like it was a grandson meeting his grandfather after a long time. And that's kind of how our relationship was, mostly like grandfather and grandson, like family friends, so to speak. But junior, like, oh, grandfather, please teach me, instruct. Then Krishna said, hey, by the way, guess what? You know, this is your guru. Took me a while to realize, you know, sometimes, you know, you marry your childhood sweetheart when you're 35 or something, you know, it happens. Some girl that, we were friends when we were kids. Then I went to Australia to go to school. She went to London. Then lo and behold, here we are, you know, we're married. So then it was like that. Krishna arranged. So I'm just telling you this, that's why I don't know if one has any conscious part to play in meeting the guru. One may think he's choosing the guru, but I think the guru is being chosen already, either in last life or by Krishna. So Jiva Goswami, his duty is to reveal these things. So in Nectar Devotion, when Rupa Goswami says so many bewildering things, he says, one should follow the resonance of Vrindavan. That's all. He doesn't explain anything more. How to do it? What does that mean? So then Rup Kaviraj and different famous, very powerful preachers and famous devotees over the last 500 years have appeared on the firmament of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And they've interpreted, this verse is not clear, so it leaves room for interpretations. So he said following the Vrijvasis means to follow the Vrijvasis. You know, they worship Shiva and Shani and Durga and Ram and also, but you know, Krishna, they love Radha and Krishna, but Radha and Krishna, they're like their family members. And the Vrijvasis don't wear Tulsi beads and they don't put Tulsi on their offerings and so many things. They don't chant job. Many, many things. They're Vrijvasis. So the modern contemporary Vrijvasis we should follow. So then his followers are pretty much a renegade movement in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And there was a lot of dissension and confusion because there's so many misinterpretations. So Jiva Goswami, even with his tikas, I mean, of course, doesn't mean that for this person himself, he wasn't accepting those tikas. He gave his own tikas, being roughly a contemporary of Jiva Goswami, Rupa Kaviraj. So when Vishnu Chakravarti came on the scene 100 years later, then he made it very clear, following the Vrijvasis, because Jiva Goswami did his part to make this Ujjalamani clear. That's why these two tikas are there. There's two lines of this verse. And sometimes in some verses, there's 15-page commentary of Vishwanath, one shloka. So that means if a shloka has 15 pages commentary, how important is that shloka? So these shlokas are all about Radha and Krishna's loving pastimes, and their moods and their devotees and how to serve them. So this is of the utmost importance. This is basically a textbook for the Raghunuga Bhaktas in Madhurya Ras to cultivate their Manjari Bhav. And this is the basic, the textbook. Like once you study medicine, but when you become a doctor, you don't walk around with a textbook in your hand. It's supposed to be all in your mind and heart and in your hands, the talent of surgery or whatever. And you carry on. Of course, now they carry a laptop and brush up on what to do, or you watch the steps on the laptop. God knows. So this is an essential handbook. So even after Jiva Goswami's commentaries, 100 years later, Vishnath says, oh, I have to make comments on the comments. So therefore, when we have to read these commentaries, so just think that. I mean, it's a very beautiful thought when you're, especially in Ragmarg, and you're meditating on your Guru's Sroop and your Sroop, that, my, you know, OMG, right? OMK, oh my Krishna, I'm going to be forever with my Gurudev. Wives come and go, husbands come and go, children come and go, bodies come and go, countries come and go, positions come and go, ashrams, varnas, money, looks, body, everything. Come and go, come and go. Anajana, anajana. A guru comes, never leaves. And you never leave guru. Because guru is Krishna. If you can't, how can you leave? Like someone, how can you leave Krishna? You can't leave Krishna, he's right in your heart. When you leave, he leaves. When the Atma leaves, Paramatma goes with him to the next body. So this, if this is the fact, and it is the fact, that this person that I quote-unquote choose, or I'm led to, or I am inspired by, and whatever, and I become a disciple, I have to think a long time if I have any opportunity to even think. If it's a conscious choice, which I highly doubt it in retrospect. I didn't sit down, yes, I know my guru, I know my guru is out in Govardhan, I'm going to find him, I'm just going there now. I had no idea. It was not in my knowledge. So when one finds guru, then it goes like this. So this is time for the other class, but we'll finish Jiva Goswami. Says Ujjvala Ras is the most astonishing among all the rasas. In Ujjvala Leelamani, it describes this. Now, as per the standard, the acharyas, they comment on the different words of the verse. He says, Nama Krishna. He says that Krishna's name has attracted many rasic bhaktas towards himself and his expansions. Krishna eternally gives bliss to everyone by the festival of his form. So he's combining the idea that Krishna's form gives bliss and it's also a festival. So he puts them together and says, when someone, it's very nice what he says, the beauty, the festival of the beauty of Krishna, Krishna's body is so beautiful, it's like a festival. Festival has so many, when there's a festival, your senses are totally absorbed. Tasty food and pleasant sounds and beautiful colors and beautiful people and to see and hear and taste and touch and many things and to do and experience. It's a total inundation of all the senses and mind and the utsav or the festival, Janmotsava. So just seeing Krishna's form, it's an entire, it absorbs all of our senses like a festival. Our eyes become absorbed, our nose, and we're smelling the fragrance of his garlands and perfumes, and then when someone gives prasad, just standing there, how can someone stand in front of Thakurji, apparently only a pratima, a form, a statue? Of course, it's Krishna for the devotees. But the person can stand there for hours on end and be totally enthralled and captivated and enchanted. This is how we hear the description of the childhood of pure devotees. Even in their childhood, they carry over their sanskaras of their intense attraction to Krishna. And a young boy named Abhay stands in front of a Thakurji named Govinda, and he can't move for 5 hours. Can you bring to me one boy, 5 years old, that can sit in front of you for 5 hours and not move? You've had children. 5 minutes to be, they're like all over the place, like 10 monkeys. I know, I was one. My brother and my two brothers, 3 monkeys and 1 tree. It's terrible for the tree. So this is amazing, power of Krishna. And then he's called Prabhu because he's always the supreme controller, Prabhu. And he's the object of everyone's service. So Prabhu means that, Prabhu means master, controller. And Prabhu means he I'm his servant. And so he's the object of everyone's servant service. So now this is Vishwanath. And first he has a very beautiful invocatory prayer because Jiva Goswami didn't feel so much on reverence towards Rupa Goswami. Of course, there's different things to be said, but Jiva Goswami, he's beginning the book, and well, he also has a small prayer. He also prays Rupa Goswami as the older brother. He just says that he's identical. The goal of Jiva is Sri Rupa. He says, he is my goal, Sri Rupa, the elder brother of Sanatan. So that's his prayer to Rupa. He is my goal of life. And Vishnu says, may the divine river of Sri Rupa's sweet words, most pure with the sound of flowing water, having numerous auspicious ornaments oozing from each phrase, which overwhelms the intelligence, may that enter my heart and destroy the unlimited pain. I offer repeated respects to the lotus feet of Sri Jiva Goswami, whose ideas were sweetened with mercy as deep as millions of oceans. Oh, he's glorifying Jiva's Tika. He's saying just one verse of his commentary destroys multitudes of doubts. It's very excellent and very clear. Vishwanath's commentary. I mean, this is his Mangala Charana, which is contained in the comments on the first verse. He says, he's again commenting on Akrista Rasagya. By his name, Sri Krishna attracts the Rasikas, which means he attracts the women of Braj. As per Vishnu's standard, he gets right into it. He doesn't waste any time. He jumps right into Braj and Radha and Krishna. By his name, Sri Krishna attracts the Rasikas, and he takes it not to mean the devotees, but to the Gopakanyas, the women of Braj, since they are the chief Rasikas and the most worthy of being satisfied by Krishna. Krishna is attracted to the Rasikas. He took it to the ultimate limit, not just some Rasik Vaishnava or Rasik Vaishnava devotee, but the greatest Rasik devotees, and that's the gopis of Vrindavan, because that's where the book is taking us. And then he says, Nija Rupa Utsav. Krishna makes everyone blissful by his beauty. With a form just like the coward boys, he gives joy to the coward boys, and he gives joy to those in Dasya Ras. He takes Nija Rupa Otsav. Very clever. He says, so this Nija word means his own servants. So by showing his form to his servants, he gives them great bliss. So this is the person, this is the great hero that we're going to hear so much about, Krishna the Nayak. And this is the opening verse to whet our appetites about the beauty of Krishna's name and form. It's a festival. We may not have experienced all this, what Jiva is telling and Vishnu is telling, but we can accept that it's true, and we believe that someday when our hearts are pure and our minds are pacified, then we can actually appreciate what they're saying, because we're worshiping the same Lord and hoping to experience that same festival.